of City Hall and welcome to our City Council regular work session for October 3rd. And we have items on our agenda for discussion, review of the agenda for the Election Review Committee meeting, which comes up on October 7th. That's the Friday night meeting in which we canvass votes and certify the election. And then also the draft agenda for the general meeting. We'd like to review the status of the steel float issues, what we're doing about storing the steel float for the winter. And we've already talked a little bit about the vacant city treasurer position, but we'll review that again for anybody who's tuning into this meeting. And if anybody's got ideas for renaming the old post office building for its new uses, we'd like to talk about that. You know, people are willing to do that. And then anything else that a council member wants to bring up and discuss, we can handle. So the first item, we're not seeing the whole thing on the screen here. Okay. Well, we should begin again, I guess, again with our reading of the City of Gustavus vision statement. I'm about to skip that. Vice Mayor, would you like to read that off the wall here for us?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and a caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Okay, thank you. Too many things on my screen here, so hang on a second. Okay, so the first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for our draft agenda for the Election Review Committee. See if anybody has any questions, and that's on the screen right now. So it's a process that's set forth in our code, and we're led through it by our city clerk. We'll begin as usual, of course, with the vision statement, but then we will canvass the absentee question, defective and spoiled ballots cast in the October 4th election. I guess we're gonna have to go back. I'm trying to read it off the screen. It is right back there. And then we'll certify, remember the council in that meeting is meeting as the Election Review Committee, and it's not a standard council meeting. So it doesn't have all of the things like public comment on non-agenda items and new business and all that stuff. It has a strictly set agenda, and that's what we've got laid out here in the agenda for that meeting. So once we've canvassed the ballots and counted all of the votes that were early voting and mailed in voting and so forth, then we do a certification report on the election results, and we sign certificates of election to certify the election. So are there any questions about that process? Anybody have anything to ask of the clerk? I'm not seeing any council members with hands up. So looks like that one's okay. And yeah, we have in the packet, the clerk has also included the code that we follow for that election review committee. So review meeting for anybody who's interested in that process. Okay, the next item is the agenda for our general meeting for October, which is October 10th. And and this is an unusual meeting in that it's the first meeting in which we have a new council. We begin with the old council seated and have a roll call vote and determine that we have a quorum. And then we swear in new council meetings or members for seats A, B, and D. And they take their seats. And then we have an election of the mayor and election of the vice mayor. Any questions on that process? Okay. We'll have approval of the minutes at that point, and we have the minutes of that of the general meeting are there in the packet. You can click on that item four there, as the vice mayor just did for us here, and you can review the minutes. If you haven't read them yet, council members, I urge you to do so and make sure that the minutes have in them what you'd like. And if there's anything that is missing or that you'd like to add to it, then you can make a motion to do that. Joe, did you want to bring up your point here in the, so we could have a little discussion on whether an amendment that failed could be included in the minutes, I believe is your interest.
Yes. It hasn't been clear to me whether this is a motion to amend or just a subsidiary motion to refer to a later date. In either case, I think the council has the authority, unless people object to this, just to have something written into the minutes for the sake of the public who are interested, even if the motion did fail. I mentioned this in our special meeting a few minutes ago, but what it's about is our discussion, our passing of an ordinance at the last meeting, FY2303, and I made a motion to refer the section of that concerning contest of election to a later date so that it could be studied more thoroughly. And my motion failed, and therefore it did not get put in the minutes. And I would like to see if there's anyone on the council that objects to that going into the minutes without having to go through a motion to make it so. That's my comment.
Do any council members have any feelings on this? How would you feel, for example, and it would, by the way, take a motion to amend the minutes to add that? But that's easy to do. And at the point when we ask if there are any additions or corrections to the minutes from council members, and then we can move to adopt them as amended or move to adopt and then amend that. Either way, it's not that hard to do if you wish to do that. That would be my understanding of the process. Madam Clerk, does that seem to be how we would handle that to you?
That would be, but I would like to point out that we, in ordinance, follow Robert's rules and take action minutes. And this motion didn't, the amendment didn't pass, so there was no action taken. If, you know, it was an amendment that passed, then I still do not include all, like, the actual motion and who voted what I just include in the minutes that the motion passed as amended, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, this is something that I've been directed to do differently by different mayors. And most recently, I think a year or two ago, we hashed this out that, you know, to be consistent, to follow Robert's rules. And we aren't putting failed amendments or failed motions in our minutes. And so that's what I have been doing, following Robert's rules per our ordinance.
Okay, thanks, Madam Clerk, for that explanation. Any other council members wish to have express any thoughts on this? Vice Mayor Kyle Bishop?
Yeah, so am I understanding correctly that, you know, according to Robert's rules, we don't have to include that, but if we do have a council member and maybe several members of the public that would like that included in the meeting minutes, we certainly could do that. I'm not really seeing a reason not to include that if we have somebody that would like it to be in the minutes.
Cassie, it's my preference as clerk that whatever we do, we are consistent about it. And, you know, all the training that I've received is consistent with Robert's rules and the advice that I've received from my Robert's rules advisor is consistent with what I'm doing currently.
Vice Mayor?
Yeah, I'm not saying necessarily that you should have included it, but, you know, in a situation like this where we're following Robert's rules and then we have somebody bring it up and say, hey, you know, this would be great if this were recorded. I don't know. Is it too inconsistent to do that? I would just like to, you know, advocate for if someone has something they're passionate about or wants something in there to be recorded. Again, you know, maybe we don't have to, and typically we wouldn't, but I don't know. I'm for hearing people out.
Is there a purpose for this?
I see our city administrator reaching for the mic. Did you want to?
Well, after spending 9 years on the school board and going over many minutes and not having, I mean, if you say you're following Robert's Rules of Order, then you're supposed to follow Robert's Rules of Order. On one of the web pages that describes what should and should not go in the minutes, it says the text of any main motions considered by the body is finally voted on, that's at the end of the main motion, and what the body did with them, passed, defeated, referred to committee, or postponed, that's what goes in. Note that details of each amendment, who proposed it, and how it was voted on are not included. Not is written in capital letters. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that somebody couldn't make a motion to include it in there, or that I'm not sure if using suspension of the rules at this point might be something that you would also want to do. If you did something about suspending the rules, you could have a discussion and then decide that that's what you might want to do. But the current Robert's rules just have you put all the information in once the main motion passes, fails, gets tabled, whatever it is, and all of the extraneous stuff doesn't go in there. I'm not saying it's not valuable, I'm not saying it's not valid, but that's the modern Robert's Rules of Order and how they are, how they say to write them. So,
thank you. Yes. So our policy is that we follow Robert's Rules of Order. On the other hand, I would note that city councils in the state of Alaska are broadly empowered to do anything that is not against the law. It would seem to me that, you know, that you could waive the rules for a particular case if the council feels it's worthwhile. The reason I think for the policy as we've been following it and as Robert Rules expresses it currently is to keep minutes from being so voluminous and detailed that they're awkward to keep and awkward to maintain. And maybe there are too many questions about, well, did you really say that or this, or did you say something else? So that's why they've been streamlined to just include the primary actions. What I would offer is if you provide me with a motion, even though you'll be off the council, out of respect for you, I'd be happy to offer that motion. And the council can decide whether to essentially waive the rules for this particular case and include that item in the minutes. So I'd be happy to give you the opportunity to have that brought forward. So, and then the council just have to decide, the new council, when they get to approval of the minutes. Okay. Any other comments on that from council members? Okay, so once we get through the approval of minutes, we'll have the usual request for agenda changes, committee and staff reports for the volunteer fire department, the marine facilities coordinator, city clerk quarterly report, city treasurer monthly financials, and the city administrator's report. City administrator, did you have anything you wanted to express at this time in advance of that, or do you wish to wait another week for the general meeting?
Sorry, I'm just bringing up this email because I brought up another one to just, okay. So Jeremiah Beckett, who is sort of the director of their cooperative in Cordova, their telecommunications cooperative, he is putting a grant, they are putting a grant in to do submarine fiber from Cordova all the way down and having what they call a backhaul to Juneau through Yakutat, Pelican, maybe Hoonah, would like to come through here and go back. It gets backhauled to Juneau. Now, he's not doing this so that he can, you know, he's not doing it so that he will compete with the current fiber folks. He's doing it more for the backhaul part of it, which I don't completely understand, which is why I'd like him to explain it. But one thing that he did say that it could have the ability to do is because the cell phone providers would be using some of that backhaul capability because it's super high speed, it's higher speed than what we have even going in now, that they would be more inclined to put maybe a couple of other substations or towers or whatever throughout the community, which could improve our cell service. So basically, he wants to come here, he wants to check out the terrain, he wants to look at a few things, but he has a good working relationship with AT&T. And he said he could come here for the general meeting. I want to provide him more than 5 minutes comment period so that he can describe what's going on, and he's going to look for a letter of support. I'm going to ask for a resolution for the letter of support in which I asked him to give me his points that he wants us to make so that we could pass that if we choose to at the next upcoming meeting. Because the day I got this was so timely. It was when everything was going out, the phones were down and everything was down everywhere. And I was like, is it going to help our phone service? And he goes, well, yeah. And then we talked for quite a while. And I said, good, because if it'll help, you'll get support. So I want to let you know he'll hopefully be here. He plans on being here next Monday. And I'm hoping people will approve of whatever he's asking for support for the grant from our city. So, there's been a lot of other stuff going on, but basically this is the one thing I wanted to bring to the council's attention.
Okay, thank you. And we'll schedule him during public comment on non-agenda items, I guess. Do you think I should ask the clerk to change the schedule and put him ahead of staff reports, or so he doesn't have to wait?
You know, that's up to you guys. We just need to give him more than 5 minutes is my main thing.
Yeah. Madam Clerk, what would you think about that if we put a, if we added an item to the agenda ahead of committee and staff reports for that presentation from the person from outside, so that way they don't have to wait through our various reports?
Yeah, we could do that. We've done that before.
Okay, let's. So we'll do that. We'll have him specifically on the agenda by name, and up on the top of the agenda. So right after we do the approval of minutes, we'll go to and agenda changes. Then we'll go to his presentation. And I think it'd be interesting. I originally assumed that was just going to be middle mile connection for the internet, but I didn't understand that it could have repercussions for improving cell service here. And if so, that would be wonderful.
Probably can't see it, but I have a map of
oh, yes.
what he intends to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he's going to, and he's looking at infrastructure grant for that. Yeah. Joe, did you have something you wanted to?
Yeah, just a question. I don't know that much about cell phones, but it seems like everybody that has one gets data on it. So if he's improving cell service here, how is that not throwing Fiber Alaska under the bus?
Probably because most phone systems, I mean, people aren't, I don't know that they're streaming TV on their phone. I mean, and I don't know what kind of service they'd be purchasing in order to have all of that. He's already talked to Kunatz about this, so I'm not sure, you know, where they are, and he would be better able to explain that with his presence here. I mean, it's a good question, but I can't answer it, to be honest with you. But he said their intent was not to compete, but to enhance.
I may be able to shed some light on that. What were the fiber connection, you know, a fiber connection all the way here would be a middle mile connection to which Kunat could connect, to Bytnik can connect to that. And they probably would. They're currently using microwave from Hoonah Mountain. And they would much prefer to have a fiber optic cable all the way here. It's just always been too expensive to do. So my guess is that it would benefit Bytnik by increasing the speed of their service because they're increasing the middle mile speed. And then if there's cell phone advantages to that, that would benefit any data use over cell phones. But it would still require AT&T to put up more towers, so we still have the same connection problem. So his idea apparently is that it may somehow make it more attractive to AT&T to either install or lease more towers in Gustavus. That's something that AT&T would have to decide on, and be up to them. So, okay. Well, that'll be interesting. We'll look forward to hearing from him. We'll then move through the usual public comment on non-agenda items. The consent agenda, we have nothing in the consent agenda for next meeting. ordinance for public hearing has two items that were introduced at the last meeting, the September meeting, and scheduled for public hearing this meeting. The first one is item 11, NCO AMLIP Gravel Pit Fund. And if you click on that number 11, you'll see that this is our annual move of $6,000 from our revenue side, this in this case coming from the checking account, into the Gravel Pit Savings Fund. And this is an item that we budgeted. It's in our operating budget. We make that move every year so that we're saving a portion of the income that we're getting from selling gravel and so forth into a special fund that will continue to go up and allow us to make more improvements at the gravel pit to serve our ability to extract gravel in the future. So that's something that's already in the budget. And go back here. So any questions on that from anybody? Any council members? Yeah, it's pretty routine. But there is public hearing on it. So that's why it's not on the consent agenda. And then the next one is also public hearing on, and that's the Hardin Beach Trail capital project funding. And we discussed this, introduced it last month again. And what that does is move $43,000 into a capital project budget line to construct a beach hardened trail. We approved the scoping document for that. So the project was approved last month. What this does is put money into place so that as the project continues and we're ready to put it out to contract, we have money in line to cover the cost. And it may not be as much as $43,000. It depends on how we might adjust the plan as we go forward. Any questions on that from any council members? Okay, I guess that's pretty straightforward. We'll have public hearing on that and then vote on whether to make that transfer and enable that project to go forward. Okay, with that, that'll finish our ordinance for public hearing. We'll go on to new business. And the next two are closely related, and I'll ask our city administrator who's developed these two items to explain them. They both have to do with updating our policy and procedure for grant submissions of two different sizes. And City Administrator Kathy Leary, would you please enlighten us all on the work you've done here?
Yes, I'm just getting to the document. Sorry. So a couple of things about the ordinance, especially for the grant that were small. They were for grants under $5,000. First of all, a lot of those were done back in the day when they had committees. And there really aren't committees as such anymore. The other thing is, some of our newer employees didn't even know they had to do this. So they were off getting like little community grants and stuff to help enhance their programs. And, you know, they found out about them at the 11th hour. They applied for one, they got one, and didn't even know about this policy until, you know, it came to light. Back in the day, you know, with revenue sharing and all that, there used to be a lot of competition for the same bucket of money, and that's not the case so much anymore. People have various avenues in which to pursue their grants. So in order to facilitate these small grant programs and encourage departments to apply for grants on their own, we are saying that if it's under a certain amount, they still have to work with the city and the city treasurer and the city administrator in applying for one, but they don't have to put it in front of the council anymore and wait two meetings for something that's due in a week. It just doesn't make sense. And we would be able to tell as the city if it's going to interfere with or compete with some other entity within the city, which as far as I can tell has not happened. We also wanted to increase the threshold, of course, because $5,000 grants are pretty much nothing anymore, you know, for doing a whole lot. So this brings current the fact that we're not having committees. It raises the threshold of what departments can do. Like Seoul can now go and apply for special grants, you know, within the fire department. The librarians can apply for special grants within a certain threshold, and we would know whether it's going to cause, you know, a lot more work for us or not, because we will look at it with them. So because we raised the threshold of the small grant application process, we had to then fix the larger grant threshold policy and procedure. Now that one's in your packet. It had a whole lot more changes to it just because of getting rid of all the mentions to the committees. And these grants still do have to come in front of the council. It's just we changed the language, eliminating the committees and talking about either staff or grant writers or work groups or whatever would be applicable to be bringing that to the city council. So we have a lot of ordinances and other policy and procedures that are kind of outdated, and we don't necessarily follow those things anymore and have it because of no more committees or whatever, for whatever reason. So anyway, this brings both of those up to date, raises the threshold, makes the threshold from the 15,000 or greater to still have to come to the city council, but updates the language. And that's what it's about. If anybody has any questions.
Questions, any council members? I've read through the both those policies and procedures, and I was around here when they were written the first time and understand, you know, what they originally were for. And the original ones are indeed rather out of date in their language. They, again, referring often to committees because we had committees back then running departments. Now we have paid staff running departments. And so the structure of such, and we have a city administrator. So the structure of for handling grant proposals and taking advantage of grant opportunities can now be streamlined. And I think these do that. Again, any questions for Kathy on this? Hope you will read through them so you're familiar in case there's some discussion. Anything else, Kathy?
Do you want me to do the one for the DRC updating of powers?
That's 15.
Yeah, are we there yet? Or?
Well, we will be next.
Oh, okay.
So hang on a sec.
Okay.
So if everybody's okay on 13 and 14, we'll go on to 15, introduction to for the amendment of city ordinance title 6, city departments and contracted services. And let me explain something about this. We needed to put this on the agenda because we are considering taking on a service or a piece of a service that is something that we have not been authorized to do before. And a government such as ours really has to be very careful that it doesn't step beyond the powers that have been authorized through the public process. In other words, we govern with the consent of the governed. And so that means that we can provide services as a second-class city for those things that are authorized in our code. And they are authorized by going through a public process in which we introduce a change to the code that says we're going to take this new thing on and this is how we're going to do it. And the public has a chance to weigh in on that. And then we, as the elected representatives, make the decision that as to whether it is to be authorized. So that's the process in a second class city. And I, I've always felt that it was very important to remember what we're authorized to do and not get into things that we are not authorized to do, especially if we're going to spend public money. So, so to make sure that we had authority in our code to develop a limited septage handling operation, that is mainly just storage, I asked the city administrator to propose a change in the code that would authorize us to do that. So, Madam City Administrator, your description, please.
Okay, so in being asked to talk to Juno Septage or Juno Septic, because a lot of people were coming to us wondering when they were going to come out here next, and apparently they had said a few times they would come out and pump, but the guy can't tie up his truck for that long. Like, he can't come out here to pump two septic tanks and go back on Thursday and then tie up his trucks. So it's unlikely, unless and until we had a storage facility when he could sort of do a round robin. His proposal was, we had these storage tanks. He could come out, pump 8 or 10 households, put them in the storage tanks, and then come back with his big pumping truck, because he can't get the big pumping truck down people's driveways. He would come back and he would then be able to take, you know, several thousands of gallons in his big vac truck or pump truck. He'd be more likely to come out and do it then. He'd come out for 3 or 4 days, he'd do a bunch of households, put it in the storage, and then come back at a later time and backhaul a much larger quantity. That way he doesn't have so much downtime with his truck in his business in Juneau. Mayor asked me to update our authority to do this. So that is in the ordinance under the DRC. And we put it as a separate line item instead of putting it as number 9. We put it because the services provided said they shall be provided. And we didn't want to make it a mandatory service. We wanted it to be an optional service. So we got properly legal language that limits our powers in this to store that we may provide the following services: storage of septic waste in properly permitted holding tanks to be disposed of in accordance with all applicable federal, state, and local laws by contract with a private business entity, if authorized by the council, and by contract as approved by the council, in which contract shall provide that the entity shall defend and indemnify the city from all damages and liability related to or resulting from the disposal process. So it's in there very strictly, but it gives us the authority to do it. And trust me, we're going to get a contract with this guy that says he's going to do it. We're not just going to get and put the storage tanks in there and then not have him do it, or at least that's what our intent is. So this just document allows us these powers, whether we do it or not is a whole different subject, but these tanks that they've got for sale are a fraction, they're double wall tanks, and they're a fraction of what they would cost to buy new ones. They're 10,000 gallons each. So this allows us to do it if everything works out for us to do it and it's approved. It sets us up to be able to do it, but there's gonna be a lot of hoops still to jump through in order to do so. And I know septage has been a big issue here for a really long time. I know that the former administrator worked on a lot of projects related to this with some other options. They were very expensive. This is not that expensive, and it keeps it in the hands of private business instead of the city having to get involved with it. So we have the scoping document to go along with it, with the hopes that John Barry is actually in Juneau right now for something he had to go do, and he's going to actually go look at the tanks for us to make sure that, you know, he's going to do an inspection of the tanks so they're not sight unseen. Not the best option, but it's one that we have that we can entice a private business to come out and do. And he said he might even be working with HUNA to see about taking the septage over there, because they have a big, huge facility now, processing facility. So, but that'll be up to him to work with. So trying to do something to help out so we don't have backed up septic systems all over Gustavus, basically.
Thanks. I might add just to expand slightly on what you said about how he's going to operate. He has two trucks.
Yeah.
A small one that is easy, can easily go up small driveways like we have so many of here, with a limited, 1,500 or 2,000 gallons or something. And then a bigger one that's 4,500 or more gallons. So he would bring the small one over on a Monday, pump like crazy, and then take it back with one load on the ferry on Thursday, or whenever those 2 days, closest days are. But he would pump those tanks mainly into our storage tanks and pump up to 20,000 gallons into those tanks and then carry a load back with him. And then, so that truck's just tied up here for 2 days, and it's going to be pretty busy, and he's willing to do that. Then he would bring over the larger truck on the ferry, have an arrangement with the ferry. Apparently he's already discussed this with him, where he could be first off and last on. So when they get here, he's off the ferry first, runs to the storage tank site at the DRC, fills up that truck, goes back and gets on the ferry and is back to Juneau. So he's done the whole thing in one ferry trip in one day. And so that makes safer use for him of that truck, and he doesn't have to worry about having his big truck over here and stuck or something when the ferry doesn't run. So that's sort of how we see that working. Then we'd have to have that called out carefully in a contract. So does anybody have any questions about what we're doing here to put this authority in our code? That's the only thing this particular item does, is put the authority into the code for us to offer a septic storage system for private, in contract with private operator. Any questions from anybody? Oh, Joe.
Was his price still going to be 90 cents a gallon?
He hasn't said. He hasn't said what his price would be. And I'm sure that's going to, I think his target is to be as reasonable as possible, because he has to be attractive to get people to use the service. So, Kathy, did you know anything else about price, or is it too early for him to even estimate that closely?
Well, it's too early for one thing. I think it's going to depend on whether he can take it to HUNA for their treatment plan, or whether he brings it back to Juneau, because Juneau has a dehydrator and they turn their septage into dried little biscuits, and then they ship them south because they're not allowed to burn them because of PFAS contamination. So it doesn't matter if it's ours or whose it is, it's all going to get mixed up and they're not allowed to burn them. So he's beholden to the price that he gets charged to bring the sewage to, the
treatment plant
where they dispose of it. So it will depend on which, I suspect it'll depend on which entity he's dealing with to dispose of the sewage. I mean, to me, it's still going to be pretty close to that cost, but maybe it can be minimized, but we don't know yet.
Okay, any other questions? Members? Okay. Well, then that takes us on to the project scoping document, which we wrote up to describe this project. You may recall the council actually approved a scoping document for a much more elaborate storage and shipping process. And we actually approved that last spring. And that was one where we were going to have to buy multiple tanks that would be at the harbor, and we would fill them up and then move them on the lightweight barge to Juneau and so forth. And the cost of that one was like something like $100,000. This looked like a much more economical process for us. So we did a new scoping document to describe this. And you can review that document, but it's essentially as Kathy has described, we'll buy two used tanks and bury them in the either on the DRC tract or on the adjacent harbor tract that we own. That would be B3, I think, that triangular lot just to the north of the DRC, across the road from the DRC. But wherever it would be particularly convenient to for the pumper to come down quickly, load it while the ferry is in port and return. So any questions on that scoping document that we would also approve, which authorizes us to proceed to develop this project? Okay, I'm not seeing anything. So we'll have that on the agenda for your approval. And then the last piece of this would be introduction of ordinance FY23 NCO, which would provide the funding to do this. So we have the authority in the first item that we did to offer this new service. We have the project description in the next item, and then this item would put money in a capital project line to fund that. And actually, I think there are two NCOs that do that, just because we are using ARPA funding, if I recall right. Yeah, from the American Rescue Plan Act. So actually, if you go to the second one, you'll see that it shows federal revenue, American Rescue Plan. And that is money that comes into our, that is appropriated into our operating budget and is part of balancing the operating budget. But we are going to take $30,000 of that and not spend it in the operating budget, but appropriate it instead to the capital budget for this item. And so so one NCO moves $30,000 out of the original budget, operating budget, as income from the rescue plan, and instead assigns that income to the capital project for the septic storage facility. And then it has a couple of other adjustments for, we're getting more in payment of lieu and taxes than we anticipated, $9,000 more than we thought. So we have that change to our budget included. And also with state revenue, we got more state revenue by $12,978 than we anticipated in the budget. You know, we always budget these things conservatively and guess low. And in fact, that turned out to be the case here. So so the actual net change in the total income to our operating budget is $7,587.51. And then going back to the earlier one, you'll see that $30,000 moved from the checking account where it lives into a separate line item for the septic storage facility. So the net effect of all of that for the storage facility is to put $30,000 that was in ARPA funding, federal funding for things that include health and safety items, moves that into a capital line so that we have it available for use for that project. Any questions on those NCOs? I confuse everybody, hope not. Anything else you'd like to say about it?
Well, I just want to reiterate that note the ordinance change, even with all of this stuff and all the work we would have to do on it, and assuming the septage people sign off on our stipulations, that the city council would still have to approve the whole thing. So just because we're putting all these forward, we're just getting ducks in a row, should it be able to happen. And the council still has to approve it. So just want to reiterate that. Thanks.
Okay. Now, I think that gets us through our agenda. Let me, that's it for the general meeting agenda. Okay, then we had some other small items that I think we wanted to discuss. And I'm gonna have to find my list again on that, or maybe you can put it up on the screen on our draft agenda for the, I got so many things on my computer screen here, I'm getting a little bit behind on finding them. Okay, I just go to your version. Okay. Steel float issues. I don't think we have Ben here, do we? But we have Joe, who has worked so hard on the steel float issues. And do you want to give us an update, Joe, on where we are? I think Joe's got some great ideas on this. And I'm so thankful for you, Joe, for time you put into making this, finding solutions for us, along with Ben.
So Ben's not online?
He was here in here, but I don't know, maybe he's, I'll see. Ben, are you online? I don't have the whole list up here.
He asked if he was needed anymore. And when we talked earlier, we thought for the general meeting, he would be here for that, but not for this one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think Joe can give us a good summary.
Well, we've been, pretty discouraged with bull moose and not very optimistic about the future, even if we could get it fixed. And it was very expensive to try and straighten things out over there. So we've been looking at possibilities of putting the big steel float in the river, either on the river bank with some sort of anchors. In this case, it would be buried anchors from the shore because we don't have any to put in the river yet. But lately we've been looking at taking the steel float up the river just past the boat launch. And there's a steel dolphin there that was originally meant for tying up barges, which don't come in the river anymore. And so we talked about putting the second collar of the steel float, attaching it to that dolphin. That would leave about 30 feet of the float upriver from the dolphin and 170 feet downriver, which would take it 10 feet short of the steel piling at the bottom of the boat ramp, which we can secure there in some fashion. And that would close off the gravel side of the boat ramp. Talked to Paul on the lightweight, and he was fine with that. He just used the concrete side for those few months of the winter. The advantage of this is we don't have to use any anchors. It's not going to go, it may go dry occasionally on a really low tide, but for the most part, it's going to be floating or partially floating. So it alleviates a lot of the freezing worries. Boats can tie up on the west side of it, probably through the winter if they so choose. And that's about it.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a great option. So as I understand, we'd have one collar would be attached to a pylon on the a dolphin, and the other end, obviously our collars aren't going to exactly match with the pylons that are there. So we get one attached, I guess, on the upstream end, and then the downstream end, we just tie off to something else.
Well, the downstream, we're only about 10 feet from the other steel piling.
So we can tie to that other one.
Yes.
With a cable or a heavy line or something like that.
Yes. And we will have to have Elm or someone go down to the bottom of the gravel ramp and clean out some gravel in there and just dredge it a bit because it needs it anyway. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that sounds like a great plan. So anybody have any questions for Joe on this? I know we don't have very many council members on right now, but just the four of us, I think. So, okay, thanks. Macon City Treasurer position, I commented on that in the special meeting. We so far have no applicants for the position, but we think we have some interest, and we are holding the position open until such time as we can get an applicant that we'd like to recommend to the council for hiring. So that's where that is. And in the meantime, we're most grateful that Ben Sadler's been willing to take on a lot of extra hours and responsibility and sit in the treasurer chair. And we did give him a boost in pay for that work, commensurate with the expanded duties required in a temporary position there. The last item I put on there was renaming the old PO, and we've got only four of us here. We could discuss it briefly, but I'd suggest that maybe I should just sort of postpone or much discussion of this for a work session with the new council. Anybody have any ideas on naming the old PO? The only thing, the name that I thought of was maybe Willow Hall because of that big willow out there that people seem to like. But got any other suggestion? Anybody else thought of anything? Or if anybody in the public wants to suggest to a council member by email or calling them or whatever a name for that, that'd be great. But for those of you listening in, but any council members want to, any ideas right now? So, okay, well, we got to get to some place. We got to get to where we're not calling it the old PO or the old preschool. I think at one time, way back, it was a welding shop even. So it was an FAA building. So, okay, do any other council members have anything else they'd like to bring up in the work session here? That's all the agenda that I have. Okay, it looks like we've got through it then, and thank you all for attending. Well, it's very important that all of us be here next Friday night for the election review meeting, and we need to do that in person because we need to count ballots physically, and we normally have one person pulling or opening envelopes and reading the result while another person looks over their shoulder to make sure it's read correctly. Then we have two sets of tally sheets with two people on each of those. So we're looking at six people to do it. We can, of course, and the city clerk generally oversees it. If we need an extra person, we can always pull in the city administrator or treasurer or something like that to help out. But or one of the members of one of the election officials that was approved. So, but we need to have council members here so that we're doing it exactly per the book. And we're going to be very careful to make sure the public is fully confident in how the process is conducted. I have nothing further. One last chance. Anybody with anything to say? Okay, I guess we're done then. Thank you all and good evening.